This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 494, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Yeah, first day of school, good grades are cool, trying to find a new way to roll, and land a new major boo, my mind is like a ride, bumping young Jeezy inside, I'm marching to the beat of my own drum, and tomorrow don't care about the outcome, work, who cares too, I love her t-shirts and her hair.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 494. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello, Connor.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
Oh, how pleasant.
Are we actually doing the show? We're all ready to go?
We're all ready. I was born ready.
I am quite pleased to proceed.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite comic. We call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, other books, talk about some other fun stuff, listener mail. We just try to have a good time. That's all we're trying to do. Nothing more, nothing less. Here's a spoiler warning.
Well, Josh, I have an agenda.
He has his political agenda. We all know that. This is a serious spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be some spoilers, so there you go. And this week, Ron had to pick.
This week I had to pick, and I chose to celebrate the wonderful Astro City with its 25th issue of this current run that's been running since 2013. And longtime listeners probably know that Astro City is a favorite amongst all three of us, correct?
Yes.
Yeah?
I don't think you have to confirm that. It's been Pick of the Week like 100 million times in the last year. And then if it wasn't Pick of the Week, there's always like, the Gorillas, the drums, man!
I gotta tell you, the last story arc with the drum-playing gorilla was fantastic.
Yes.
Anyway, but what I thought was interesting about this was that So with Astro City number 25, you know, written by Kurt Busiek, guest artist Jesus Marino filling in for the usual Brent Anderson. And it's funny because for years and years and years, I would have told you Astro City can only be Kurt Busiek and Brent Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems as if they've begun to utilize a fill-in artist to keep it on schedule. And honestly, it didn't, you know, like as much as I like Brett Anderson and enjoy his work, I thought Jesus Marino was, you know, doing it in the Astro City style enough, but not totally copycatting Brent Anderson.
His style was very close to the point where I didn't realize it for a few pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in the middle of it, and I was like, wait a minute, this is one of them fill-in ones.
But, yeah, because it's like it's a little cleaner than Brent.
The styles are not quite 1970s.
Yeah, exactly. But and so in doing for the fill-in issue, this is one of the patented, you know, one issue, one and done, introduce a character, give you the entire backstory and history of the character, give a conflict and a resolution all in the span of 22 pages.
It's pretty amazing.
Which I just find, you know, if you dollar for dollar, Kurt Busiek is probably one of the best superhero writers ever, and every issue of Astro City just proves it, and this does it again, and that you got we've never seen this character before. What is her character name? I don't remember what it was. dragonfly or whatever it is.
Hummingbird,
that's what it is. We've never seen her before. And in this issue, we meet her mother. We see her mother's origin. We meet her. We find out that she accepted the mantle from her mother, and she's got powers that they don't quite understand. And it works with the Honor Guard and all this sort of stuff. And then you find out where her powers came from, and it just complete story in one issue, which I think
it's not like a complete other world and set of rules and like a whole universe basically. And he does that a lot.
And at no point did I feel tired.
No.
You know, or like, because you know how sometimes when you read a book and there's a lot of words. No, but you know what I mean. I don't mean
that. Yeah, it wasn't overstuffed. It wasn't like a book I won't name from the New 52 launch, but
yes,
it was still very dense and you still got an entire package. I never at once felt like we were skimping over anything. I felt like this. We had all the information you needed. You knew a lot about her character by the end of it. And it was a nice little one-shot.
Did you notice that they went to Maine again? Kurt Busiek has a thing for Maine.
Yeah, I did. I did notice that. I think
he didn't. He didn't even spell it out. It was super subtle.
Yeah.
But I was like, he just went to Maine again. Went to Bangor. Motherfucker. That guy has a thing for Maine. But long-time listeners may not know that Kurt Busiek brought us one of our favorite characters, Aquaman from Maine.
Yes.
Arthur for me.
Oh, that was Kurt Busiek. I forgot.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I forgot. Even I forgot. Jeez.
I feel like Connor right now.
Like 7, 8 years ago.
Was that 8? No, that was longer. That was like 9, right?
I've only been doing it 10.
Oh, God.
It was like 15, 20 years ago, I think it was.
Oh, I've wasted, 70s. I've wasted my life.
It was in the 70s, yeah.
But and I know you guys have been talking about it, but you know, since I've recently returned to the show, I haven't had an opportunity just to marvel at how great this run has been. And
so, yeah, we mentioned it very briefly. Like we were just chatting the other day, and then I just immediately read it and I finished it, and I was like, "You gotta be kidding me! Another fantastic!" Like it was like I got to the end of it, and I was like, That was wonderful. And yeah. I didn't know, I couldn't put my finger on why, because it was just another issue of this comic book. And I don't know why I enjoy it so much. What
I find fascinating is that Astro City has not been a perfect run, you know, in that.
Overall?
Yeah. Like if you look at the total 20 years or whatever of oh, Jesus Christ, 20 years. 22 years of the book, you had, you know, a really strong beginning, and then you had a weak middle, and then you've got a really strong, third phase, current phase. That middle phase with the Dark Age and all that sort of stuff was a slog. It was like, and I don't know what made it. I don't, because it was Busiek and Anderson and doing their thing, and I don't know if it was the extended, you know, telling a longer stretched out story over 8 issues versus a single self contained issue or whatnot. But you know, but this current arc has followed closer to the original formula when it originally started, which was more, you know, 2 to 3 or 4 issues at most. And then a single issue, you know, like that sort of thing. And I think that this formula is what works best for him. And I mean, and the thing was, after I finished reading this issue, I was like, 25 issues. Like, I didn't even.
That's what I was about to say. So we got 25 issues. I don't remember exactly how long the first age went, but it was maybe 3 6 issue chunks.
I think so. Let's see.
I think there's 3 trades. There's the original batch, which is 6 issues. Then there's the Confessor part, and then I think there's another little bit after that, but this is more than that. But you're exactly right. This feels like reading that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Astro City is, I think, the only series that I ever went back and made sure I had all the issues for. I own every issue of Astro City, even though they came out before I started reading comics again.
Really?
Like I had to like hunt for them.
Really?
Yeah, because they were like a thing. The first time I got that first trade, I really fell in love with it, and I went and I bought all the issues of Confessor and all the like, and so I have like a straight run up until like through the Dark Ages, which is unfortunately named. I have them all digitally now, but those first chunks, like I collected those.
Yeah.
Those are the only and the last thing I actually collected in issues.
So the Dark Age were 4 miniseries at 4 issues a piece. So 16 total issues.
They took a long time to come out.
Yeah, they came out over the course of long years.
Yeah.
Whereas this has been, I mean, it's supported. It's a Vertigo book or a DC book.
The Dark Age took 5 years for those 16 issues to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas this run has just been like clockwork.
Well, I think that
he might be healthier. I don't want to speculate on that, but he's always talked about his health and in relation to especially Astro City, how this book taxes him mentally more than writing Captain America would. So,
boy, it feels effortless, though, doesn't it?
It totally does. This feels like the Kurt Busiek that was running the world in the 90s.
Kurt, I think it's very easy to say that Kurt Busiek is a big part of the three of us being way into comics and when we met and what we were into at the beginning of whatever this whole thing is.
Mm-hmm.
I think and it's funny because I think that Kurt Busiek, I mean, like, we're talking, this is superhero comics straight up superhero comics, and it's interesting to see how Astro City has been able to tap into the things that interest all three of us, because all three of us have very differing tastes.
Sure.
You know, I'm not going to begin to, you know, question why you guys like it or not, but I know why I like it is because I just love the characterization and the interconnection and the sense of history and the sense of location, and it just, like, it's just all this contained little world that I can just get lost in.
There's his, notwithstanding the things we were just talking about, but his consistency of tone, of purpose, it's generally like he edges into some darker stuff, but it isn't that. There's a wonder to all of it that is underlying. And then what you've done is you're continuing taking the camera and focusing on somebody else's point of view. I always like to think as they look up into the sky or they look down from the sky. Those are, you know, that's how this book works. And it's interesting that there's just so many sort of little superhero concepts where I tend to get sick of them in other places, but Kurt Busiek has a special touch.
It's also interesting that we don't get sick of these pastiche characters here, whereas, you know, every other superhero that's not Marvel or DC, for the most part, is a Marvel and DC knockoff. But mm-hmm. here we're okay with it.
Yeah.
I think he taps into some sort of primal superhero vein.
He's good at it.
Well, yeah, because it's also perpetually 1985.
True.
You know what I mean? Like
I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a big, I mean, and yes, there's that technology and people have cell phones, things like that, but I get a complete 80s vibe out of it. And there's no need to take those pastiches and reinvent them or relaunch them. It just is what it is. This is the Batman-esque guy, and this is the Superman-esque guy, and this is the Wonder Woman-esque woman, and then just celebrate it.
I think he does actually get beyond that. You know, like I don't have an analog for this hummingbird character. I think
it totally does, but it's still grounded in that story, that world that was built originally on, you know, the Captain America version and the Samaritan and all that stuff. But it's whatever he's really good at tone wise, it works here, where I get annoyed with it in other books.
Yeah, he's good.
And again, they're not as quite talented as Kurt Busiek.
There you go.
True. Yeah, exactly.
I think that 85 thing is a really good point too. It's very super grounded.
Yeah,
and in a way, he's not really trying to break new ground. He's not trying to give you a new twist on superheroes.
No, he's just telling stories,
doing what he does really well, and we all like what he does really well, so we haven't gotten sick of it.
All right,
I'm not gonna say I was surprised. I got to the end of it, I thought, well, there's no way that's gonna be pick of the week again. And you said it was pick of the week, and I thought, okay,
yeah,
all right, I see that.
Yeah,
I see that.
All right. So it was almost pick of the week, but I couldn't quite do it because I felt the reason wasn't as noble as Astro City. But
Marvel has made a big return to the show. I don't know if anyone's noticed that.
It was a big Marvel week. It was a big Marvel week, that's for sure. But by any chance, did you guys read Captain Britain and the Mighty Defenders?
Why don't you take a guess? Yes.
Well, you missed out, and I'm going to tell you why you missed out for two reasons. One is, so this is a Secret Wars tie-in book. It was written by Al Ewing, but art by Alan Davis.
Okay.
And we're not talking, this is good Alan Davis.
Good,
like,
Davis.
Like, really good Alan Davis. Like, holy shit. I almost forgot how much I love Alan Davis. But this picks up the thread of the Muslim Captain Britain that Paul Cornell created in Captain Britain in the MI-13. Do you remember that? Was that?
Yes.
Or was that book?
Yes, that was it.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, in the little world, the battle world and Secret Wars, there's a section that is, this is very, this is pushing the limits. And I'll tell you why it's pushing the limits. This this region of the world, so Tony Stark died and instead gave the Iron Man suit to Dr. Yinsen, and he's the one who survived and became Iron Man.
Oh, I see. Okay, the guy in the cave.
Yeah, and so Dr. Yinsen...
Dr. Yinsen, it makes me think that he's like a Swede.
Yeah. But so he becomes the head of this section, and it's very Stark-like, and it's very... You know, like, you know, technology, and he's a very Tony Stark analog and that sort of thing. And then for some reason, and I don't know, I, you know, like, I know a lot about Marvel, but I don't know what is tying these in together or whatever. But, you know, in this world, Spider-Man died, but so the Prowler, you know, couldn't save him. So he adopted his identity and became the new Spider-Man, but nobody takes him seriously. It's very strange. She-Hulk is there. As an agent of Thor, which is, she has a gavel.
All right.
Right. And so,
when you get to the part where this almost is the pick of the week.
Well, yeah. So about two thirds of the way through it, because apparently you get the sense that there's their whole city is got a wall around it. They're trying to protect themselves from something. And basically, what happens is that Dr. Yinsen realizes that whatever's going on Battleworld is wrong, and that maybe Dr. Doom isn't actually a god. And Doom hears this and appears and goes, "Oh well, you don't believe in me? Well, you know, good luck protecting your city from the city next door, Mondo City." And I was like, "What is Mondo City?" Then all of a sudden, an enormous tank with like 20 guns breaks through the wall, and then within it comes. What I can only describe as a Marvel version of Judge Dredd.
Huh.
And it's the Punisher and Emma Frost instead of Judge Dredd and Judge Anderson. And they capture the Captain Britain woman or whatever. And then they show us Mondo City. And it's basically Mega City 1, but instead of the judges, it's the Punisher. I'm just like, okay, fun? Cool, crazy, but kind of pushing the limits here. It's just like Judge Dredd is not a Marvel character,
right?
It's like,
right. There's no internal logic to this at all.
No,
whatsoever.
There's none at all. It basically is just like, hey, Al Ewan's British and Alan Davis is a British artist. Let's do Judge Dredd, which I thought all the Secret War stuff was going to have some basis in Marvel reality, but I guess not. And that's okay. It's crazy enough for me to enjoy it. So it ends, the last page has got a, you know, the big shot of Mondo City, which is Mega City, and it's got learn to love your law and stop thy shop thy neighbor, and you know, and it's all very Judge Dredd.
All right.
So anyway, but it looked beautiful. It was Alan Davis, so good. So
speaking of that, Hawkeye 22 finally ends this run.
Finally.
I was really confused at first.
Well, that's the thing. Like, yeah. And I don't want to sound like I'm happy this run's over. This was one of my favorite books while it was coming out, and it still remains, to me, the best looking book in comics. But like, it's been so long since 21, and it's been so long since 20. I barely remembered what was happening.
Yep.
So
that really hurt it for me.
That's true. And here's the thing. This is like, this book makes us like the battered wives of comics. Like,
yeah.
I keep getting mad about it. Because it's like the schedule is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I keep going, it's okay. Come back in. I love you.
Yeah,
like, it really is. Like, yeah. I want to be angry. And at the end, I was like, fuck, that was really good, though.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing is that, like, I can't tell you what happened in issue 21, but by three pages in this, I was totally in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to the omnibus. Like, I want to read these 22 issues minus the Kate issues. You know, all together and sit down and really sort of remember what this was all about.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess this whole thing was about these guys trying to buy this building.
Yep.
And then Barney stole his money.
Which is, you know, New York real estate is pretty cutthroat.
It's true.
But,
and is he deaf now?
Yeah, he's been deaf. That was a thing.
Well, yeah, I know he's been deaf, but I thought it was temporary. I thought it was just like, oh, there was a big explosion by his ear, but now he's got hearing aids.
I don't remember because it's been such a long time, something happened.
There was the gunshots in the small vestibule when Barney got shot.
He had – McCann gave him like super Stark implant hearing aids or something.
Oh.
And that was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And then this – is somehow related to that, but it's been such a long time that I don't know. I mean, I tend to go with this book. Obviously, at this point, you know, it's on its own.
Yeah, it's in its own little bubble.
So, I mean, and it's definitely setting the tone for what Hawkeye is in the rest of the world, obviously.
Yeah.
I just want to point out this in terms of just storytelling. The reason that I'm so forgiving was the sequence. It's 12 panel page where Pizza Dog gets shot. That's not what I liked it. But,
oh God! You know how much I'm not a fan of animals, and even that got me. I was like, oh
yeah, no. But I just from a pacing standpoint, like they slowed down time on that page.
Yep.
Like you could feel it as you were reading the section, the page before it, and you saw the dialogue and what was happening. You turn that page and you don't see this a lot where you literally feel the comic book page just go.
Yep.
And that is such a really cool use of storytelling. And it was so well done. He's done this a couple of other times in this where, you know, what took place between letting go of the arrow and then, you know, where it hit.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, that took you a year to do. Fine. That was great.
Yeah, four or five pages after that, when Hawkeye's got an arrow on the face painted guy, and the two panels of showing the guy's got the gun hidden in his sleeve, like I was like, oh come on, this is great. You know, like yeah, it's like it's tough because it, like this, and it's funny because it's like, you know, it's hard to tell, you know, where the magic comes from, how much of it is Fraction versus how much it is artist David Aja, you know, but like, and, you know, but it doesn't matter. It just comes together on the page so beautifully and so perfectly. And it's just like, it's kind of bittersweet because it's been so long, but this is the last one and it's, you know, and it's over, but I want more. And
if it wasn't so good, it would totally be gimmicky too.
Yeah.
I mean that little, like the 1-2 panel, like that's super cutesy.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because it's so good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We said this feels very much like a 70s movie, and it does, right down to the 70s cop who's wearing the old policeman's uniform and has got mutton chops and a mustache.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
So this could take place in the 70s very easily.
Yeah.
I can't think of the cop's name, the Al Pacino movie.
This is longer than regular, right? Yeah, it's $4.99. It's got
it's 33 pages digitally.
Yeah. So they just, you know, they took all the space they needed just to wrap it up in one issue.
It's like Sipowicz, this cop.
No, what's the Al Pacino
Serpico?
Movie? There you go. He's like a Serpico extra. That's what he looks like. Which is great.
It's just
also puppies in that.
There's no more complete comic out there than this. That everything works perfectly together. And again, in the hands of a lesser creator, like we talked about with Asher City, this wouldn't work.
Yep.
And we've seen attempts to mimic this style, despite what they say in the PR. They're totally trying to mimic the style in other books.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work as well because these two guys are fantastic together.
Yeah, and it's something else. You got to, I mean, this team really came up. And that's why, you know, we're talking about the Kate issues or whatever. I think we're drawn by Annie Wu. They're not bad.
Yeah.
But
they're just different.
You know, well, they're not this. This is a special thing. And it forgives a great deal.
Yeah, a couple of other things that I found interesting. Towards the end of it, I love the page of all the villains agreeing to kill them.
Right.
Which you don't get any more than one word in one headshot, but it just like it's such a great snapshot of a layer of villainy in the Marvel universe. You know, which is, and the idea that they just would all meet like this, like it just cracks me up.
Is this tying into the new one?
I'm not reading the new one. Are you reading it?
Josh, aren't you reading it?
Not so far. It's definitely a continuation of those characters because it's Clint and Kate out in the world. But I'm going to assume that Lemire and Perez didn't know how this was ending.
Right, yeah.
Or at least weren't allowed to get ahead of it. So their story seems to exist in its own bubble too. It could come back in. It's interesting that they left a big breadcrumb basically that now... I don't know. They probably planned it to a certain extent. This could come up later.
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, I just put together what that page said, by the way. What happened on that page.
What do you mean?
Like, oh, he's Mr. Bishop. That's Kate's dad.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what it takes a minute to say, too.
Then looks at the photo and that sort of thing. But then the opposite page of it, then the next page goes in then, and the phone rings, and Hawkeye's standing in his apartment with an arrow in the bow.
Knocked.
It's It's like,
by the way, the dog's fine.
Right, the dog is fine. The dog just has some bandages, but like, so he's shooting, like, it's like, what is he doing when the phone rings? Because he's not shooting target practice, because then they show him hang up. And oh yeah, I guess he is. Okay, I see. I thought the target practice is in another room, but I guess he does it in his living room. Okay,
that's the Brooklyn loft space advantage.
Yeah, there you go. But
how did Pizza Dog take a shotgun blast? And
I guess they couldn't kill the dog. I mean, you can't.
Did
kill
he the always dog. Have Onitsuka Tigers? I thought he had Chucky's.
I think he's had multiple. Don't you own multiple kinds of shoes?
Yeah. Yeah,
but his no
look
different.
Is fairly. His look is fairly standard.
Yeah, but as long as they're purple, he's on brand. Then I think he had Chucky's at some point, or Adidas.
At some point, Chucky's got played out for Clint, and in the middle of all this, he was like, "I need some other purple shoes."
Well, he realized that there's not much padding at the bottom. He's going to run around in them. He's going to have
tell you
some
something.
Heel problems.
I have switched between those two shoes, but it was like 10 years ago.
Oh gosh. So anyway, yeah, so Hawkeye, end of an era. Finally wrapped it up. Good job, guys. So.
And be sure to pick up the all new Hawkeye number one, which came out 3 months ago.
Yeah, I know that. I think that one's delayed. So the book that should I assume this is Marvel's big book for the week is Ant-Man Annual One, because this is the week the movie comes out.
Shit, we need a number one. Make it an annual.
Yeah, it's on stand. So Nick Spencer, Brent Schoonover, and Ramon Rosanas. Most of it's Brent Schoonover's because it's a flashback story about when Scott Lang had an adventure with Hank Pym. Basically.
Oh, quite coincidental.
How convenient.
Yeah. I haven't loved this new Ant-Man, but I've enjoyed it well enough. I keep reading it. I really like the guy in the big bear outfit, who I think is very funny. And then I liked the flashback. I thought the art was really nice. I thought Brent did a great job. Sort of, he's gonna be one of these guys who's put into that flashbacky or retro role, because you know he did Batman 66 and he can do like sort of old style comics. But this doesn't feel like that. It just feels like it fits into that mold of this book's been a little cartoony, I guess, the same way that you know like Steve Lieber was with Spencer on the Superior Foes of Spider-Man. And I like that there's been a bit of – they're finally taking some initiative to turn Hank Pym into what they want him to be, because he's been a bit of here and there all over the place, and there's always the specter looming over him of his past. And they deal with that to a certain extent in this, and sort of the end bit where Janet comes in to talk to Scott Lang about – what happens, it doesn't matter, but they basically like he was in a bad place at that time. He was there, I guess they're sort of making excuses for him, but it's a, you know, it's a single story adventure,
which is a very Marvel thing to do.
sure then come back and like revise your excuse. But it was enjoyable. It was like a good sort of single serving of an Ant-Man story to get you an idea of where we are and what they're doing. And if you like it and you're into it, then you can keep going with it, because the you know, Spencer's the writer on the main series, and so it's going to be consistent. And I think that what I've realized is happening is that I've been reading this book for a while, completely unexcited about the movie, which you guys are going to talk about in a separate podcast. But I have totally been priming the pump for the version of Ant-Man, I realized. I was like, oh, I'm a sucker. I've been brought into whatever this is supposed to be.
You're a cog in the marketing machine, Josh.
I am, and I've been playing right along with it. Is that bear guy in the movie?
No.
Should be. It's just a man in a big bear suit. He's basically the Rhino, but a bear suit, so it's funnier.
Didn't they introduce a new giant man in this as well?
Basically, it's Scott Lang is the way that it works. There's a conversation about how Scott, you know, wanted to be giant man, and then he realized like, no, it's way cooler to be down here among the ants, even though it doesn't seem as cool to everybody else. But then in the end, because Hank Pym is assumed to be dead, so. They said in Hank's will, he gave Scott the lab and all the stuff in it. So now Scott can be Giant Man too. That's how I read it.
But didn't Scott give it to Ultra?
You're right. The gay geek squad guy.
I think he's.
Is he in the movie?
Indian or Middle Eastern.
Yeah, he's not white.
Yeah,
but he's also gay. which is, I don't care. It's why it did seem like that was a bit of a, I like that character. What one of the things that was cool about him is that Egghead captures the guy and he's like, you will want to get revenge on Hank Pym with me. And he's like, yeah, not really. Like, you know, because basically he had been, that character had been an expert on AI. And then Hank Pym, who was like the granddaddy of all the AI, was like, no more AI. And so it kind of ruined his life. So then he went to work at Geek Squad. That was the point. It's not really Geek Squad, but it's whatever this version is. And so he has to mind control him to try to take, you know, take over Hank Pym, because he's like, I don't want to kill anybody. Why would I do that?
And how does this tie into Battle World?
No idea.
Well, it's an annual. It doesn't have to.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
See? I don't really know why he gave him a superhero costume at the end. I think I had, because it didn't make any sense that he would do that. Now
other
that I think
than
about
to diversify the line.
Yeah. So I forgot about that part. So he said to this Geek Squad guy, you should be Giant Man.
Yeah. Hey, you should be Giant Man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
Josh, if you recall, I said Silver Surfer 12 was the last issue of Silver Surfer.
That was just willful denial. That was not.
Yeah, well, the story of the Silver Surfer and the girl basically ended in 12. And this is the post-issue that takes place sort of in Battle World, where he and Dawn are coming home, or going back to Earth from where they were out in space. And, you know, the Surfer is in tune to the power cosmic and realizes that something's going on that's not right. And then they run into a bunch of cosmic beings who normally would be holding all of the information in the universe, and they have nothing left. The Never Queen says there's no more future out there. And they run into Eternity, as you know, the silhouetted character who's got the universe inside of his silhouette.
Oh, I love that kit design.
Yeah, and he only has one planet and one moon in there. And it's Battle World. What's interesting about this is existing outside of Battle World, but still in Battle World.
Interesting.
So they were off in space and had sort of the reality change around them, but they are not part of that change. And then running into these cosmic beings who are all confused and, you know, not dealing well with the fact that reality has changed and Doom has changed it. And so that's been interesting. And I liked that 12-issue romance between the two of them, but if you're going to deal with Battle World, this is an interesting way to deal with characters who are not directly a part of it. So it's that this was all right. I was okay with this. And the Mike Allred art continues to be awesome. Ron, I don't know why you're not reading this.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm not reading it either, to be honest with you. I might go back and read the whole run. I've heard such good stuff, but yeah.
As an Allred fan, this has been just wonderful. And this, you know, as a Marvel fan, this is great. I mean, Silver Surfer is a great character. This has been sort of a wacky romance in space comic, and now they're dealing with Battle World. I don't know how long they're going to deal with Battle World. I don't know how long this book's going to go. I don't know if it's going to get rebooted after.
When is Battle World over?
No.
Never. It never ends.
September.
No.
September.
We are all Battle World now, Josh. Yeah.
There is only Battle World.
And we were all Battle World.
And we were all Battle World.
But there is another issue, so I do know that.
All right, that's good.
So I'm not prepared to say this is the last one.
Okay. Well, we're not.
He's not saying it isn't, though. I want everyone to make sure they caught that nuance. He's not saying that this isn't the last issue.
Right. I'm just not prepared to.
He's not saying it is.
Yeah.
That's growth. Say what you will.
All right. So, and if you want to ensure that this is not the last episode of iFanboy, head over to ifanboy.com/support, where you can find out ways that you can help out iFanboy.
Is that where we're at? Are we threatening?
No, we just don't know. We're
not prepared to say it.
Just like the comics, you never know.
It'd be a real shame if something was to happen.
So if you would like to,
Protection on our own show?
Whatever works, man. It's a cutthroat world out there.
Listen, it's a real shame if something happened to your podcast.
These are nice microphones. It'd be real shame they fell off the table.
It'd be real shame if we had to start talking about Patreon. Real shame.
All right, so don't let that happen. Go to ifanboy.com/support. The easiest and probably the best way for you to help support iFanboy is click on the link to Amazon from our site, and anytime you buy anything from Amazon, we get a couple percentage points off of that. We get some of the VIG, and that way you get the stuff you want to buy, and we get a little money, so that's great. If you want to help directly, you can click through to find out info about the iFanboy memberships program, where for $3 a month or $30 a year, you can give us your money to show your support. And if you don't want a recurring donation, you can make a one-time donation through PayPal there very easily. So go to ifanboy.com/support, and we thank everyone for your support of iFanboy. I almost said, and we thank you for your support of All About Android just by, like, muscle memory. But I didn't.
This is like you're talking to us about your other girlfriend.
Yeah. There's your script error. You can delete that book because we just talked about it. So moving on back to Battle World.
How many of these are you reading?
Not many. I mean,
because it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
It feels like you're a lot of them.
Anyway, I just wanted to mention Years of Future Past number 3 again, because Mike Norton's still drawing it, still doing great. And the big twist was that turns out Kitty Pryde and Colossus's daughter and the teenage boy that was running around with Wolverine that I assumed was Wolverine's son is actually Kitty Pryde and Colossus's son, their brother and sister. In a very Star Warsian twist, so much in fact that they said, they're like, whoa, this is pretty Star Wars. But Mike Norton doing a great job. Just a great job.
Oh God, it's not even close to September.
And then finally, I also read Siege number 1, which had Kieran Gillen's return to writing Abigail Brand, which was funny because I was like, Siege, who cares about that?
It was good.
It was a 4-issue miniseries. Like, I'm like, this gets a Battle World, but it was interesting to see how they tied into it. And it was great to see Kieran.
Everything gets a Battle World.
Yeah.
You're all Battle World.
But I actually enjoyed it. And the art on it, Philippe Andrade, was really, really good. And there was a couple of double page spreads by other artists like James Stokoe and stuff like that, which were awesome. So Siege actually was surprisingly awesome.
Justice League 42 is part 2 of the Dark Side War. And even though the mythology behind that war is a little convoluted, this issue was fun because the Justice League, while recuperating from fighting the Anti-Monitor, Metron shows up, you know, the new god of the Mobius chair. And they realize that in trying to interrogate him for information, that he doesn't actually have the information, the chair does, and he's the conduit. So they rip him out of the chair, and Batman jumps into the Mobius chair, and now he has all of the infinite wisdom of the universe, and he uses it to A, find out who killed his parents, and B, find out who the Joker really is. And when he asks the chair what the Joker's true name is, he reacts quite like Luke does when Luke is told Vader's his father. And he says, "No, that's not possible."
Is the Joker Vader?
Maybe.
Who's the Joker?
We're not told. Only Batman knows. He's in the chair.
Oh, I see. So they didn't actually tell it. Oh, okay. I see.
No, he knows. He knows who's in the chair. He knows
about
who.
I like it for years. You've talked to like fans. You've been like, "Well, would you want to know who the Joker was?" And I feel like the answer is like, "No, I don't want to know who that is." But Batman, as soon as he gets a chance, immediately, yes, I have to know. He doesn't want any of that ambiguity.
His life's in direct danger as opposed to ours.
Sure.
So he asks who killed his parents, and he says, "Yes, Joe Chill." And then, "What's the Joker's true name?" And it tells him, and he says, "No, that's not possible." And then we never get to find out.
Have we never seen Batman in the Mobius chair? I feel like I've seen that. It was in like in.
It could have been in Final Crisis,
or I don't know, maybe like Cosmic Odyssey or something, like a long time ago. Like I feel like I've seen that.
I don't think he was in for Cosmic Odyssey, but now he's a Bat God, so he doesn't want to give up the chair.
Wow.
Next issue, Bat God. I can't believe Grant Morrison never thought of that.
If you were a Bat God, would you want to get out of the chair?
No,
I wouldn't get out of that chair.
It looks like a comfortable chair.
Yeah, I know. There's something to be said for a comfy chair.
Is there a waste management system in that chair? Like, do you have to get out of the chair, or is it like in Wall-E?
Oh, God.
Anyway, so Black Canary number 2 by Brendan Fletcher and actually Annie Wu.
Just realized that they have to poop in those chairs in Wall-E.
Oh, jeez, stop. Right.
They do. There's no way they're not pooping. They can't even move on their own.
No, yeah, no, I know. I just anyway. So Annie Wu on art, who had worked on Hawkeye, we mentioned previously. So I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
Or how it ties into DC, or what I've known of that Black Canary, but it's a fun book. I like the look at it. I like the feel of it.
It caught my eye.
Yeah,
I didn't actually read it, but I sort of examined it for a bit before deciding I didn't want to read it. But it looked really good, and it caught my eye. So when I saw it on the list, I thought, okay, well, I did see something there. So that's something.
No, yeah, there's definitely something there. I mean, if I was a Black Canary fan, I'd probably be up in arms.
It's indicative of how nothing makes sense to DCU, but as its own sort of rock and roll superhero show,
yeah,
super fun. It's, you know, this punk rock group led by Black Canary fighting crime on the road, and that's great. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever in the greater context of DCU, which I know I keep harping on, but I would like some context. There isn't any, and that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't want any context. I find it funny that that it goes against everything I think of or know of the character, which I kind of like. I kind of like that kind of, you know, direction or change of direction. I think Brendan Fletcher did a great job on it, on writing it, and I'm going to keep reading it. I read the first issue. I'm going to read the second issue. So
what you didn't see was when I said that's fine, my hand was shaking.
Yeah, as the DC
fan. It's fine. The DC's users all fucked up. Nothing makes sense. It's totally good. I'm fine with it. It's happening.
Yeah, it's all fine. Yeah, it's fine. Connor, one word for you. Battle world.
Yeah.
think how I feel right now.
Well, I had Convergence. It wasn't that different.
True. Yeah, but it ended.
That's true.
The fact that they're both just doing whatever the hell it is they're doing right now is we've never been here.
I know. This long. There's no history for this. There's no context.
Uncharted waters.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, over at other publishers, we're used to this. It's not supposed to be a cohesive universe. It's not supposed to be a history. So sure, within little pockets, but for the most part, you know, that's what we're used to. But
there's no precedent.
Be completely untethered at both Marvel and DC for a long time at the same time.
Yep.
That's we're through the looking glass here, people. Now, I have a rule. The Queen and Country artist addendum. Mm-hmm. Any artist who did a Queen and Country arc, those are my guys. And so, Jason Sean Alexander put out a book from Image called Empty Zone.
Wait a minute. That's not like a rule.
I'm not aware of this rule.
A rule would be like, I read anything they do. Just saying you like them isn't a rule.
I usually do try. I always notice the stuff. I try to read the stuff they do. I read through that whole friggin' Vertigo series by Leandro Fernandez. I don't know what that was. It's a little bit I'm doing here at the beginning.
I like your commitment. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long time because they haven't done Queen of the Country in a long time. But no, I really like Jason Sean Alexander's work. Or at least I did a lot when I was younger. I'm a little further away from that style now, but it is gorgeous. However, so Empty Zone number 2 came out this week, and I wasn't around when you did number 1, but I gave another. It's like a pretty bleak post-apocalyptic world with a punker chick. And there's a lot of that.
Is it Tank Girl?
Maybe might as well. You know, she's a robot arm. It's a gorgeous book. It's so good looking. But I'm a little not pulled.
Sort of like that.
I don't know. I just it's not sucking me in. There's some really cool ideas about it. You know, it's the same world that Starve takes place in. It's the same world that Invisible Republic takes place in. It's the same world. Like, it's just,
well, you
like,
know, there's a lot of anxiety, and that manifests
No, it's totally indicative. I think it's amazing that this is the reflection that we're seeing of the world that we're seeing in the work. But there's a lot of it. And this book's strong suit is the look of it. It's really, you know, like, he's not a name that I think a lot of people know, but he's a hell of an artist. Super inky, very, I don't want to say photorealistic, but it's definitely not a cartoony style. You know, he's got a grimy world vision for this. And it's pretty vague. It's not super spelled out for you, so you kind of just have to get in and run around with it. But I'm gonna keep reading it because I really like the way it looks. I want to see what they do with it. But that's the thing to check out if you know who Jason Sean Alexander is.
And who's this from?
Image.
Who are those guys?
I don't know. It's awkward bringing it up. finally, I want to talk about Godzilla in Hell. Ron, you mentioned James Stokoe earlier. So this is exactly what it sounds like. It's Godzilla in Hell, and you might be wondering what kind of story is in Godzilla in Hell. He falls into hell. There's no dialogue.
Like through a hole?
Yeah, literally. The very first shot is him falling through a hole into hell. And he fights a demon and then falls down another hole.
And this is also from Dark Horse?
IDW.
That's right, IDW.
But much like, I will tell you, it's preferable to Hellboy in Hell.
You really don't like that story.
I don't even remember if it finished or not, but it was, yeah, I did not like that. I wanted to. It's more like Hellboy in Mexico, which was everything you wanted it to be and more. It was really cool. It's fun. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a ton of substance there, but if you want to see James Stokoe draw Godzilla in Hell getting in a fight, that's what you're going to get.
And it's completely wordless?
Yeah. No dialogue. Well, who would talk?
In hell?
Yeah. And there's nobody there other than the other. There was another big demon lizard thing that maybe.
Well,
he was Godzilla-like. Right. He got in a fight with a he got in a fight with a giant beast. I mean, that's what Godzilla does, right?
Right.
So it was it was great.
All right. There's number one?
Yep. Yep, there's more.
Or is it one shot? There's more. More holes to hole them.
Okay. That's fine.
Those are the comics we wanted to talk about. GodEyeFanboy.com. You can find the post for this show, and you can talk about these comics, other comics, whatever you read this week. You can do that at iFanboy.com. And I still, though these many years later, I still want to say iFanboy.com/comics. It's still in my muscle memory. So let's do an audience question. Norman from Canada writes and says, I had some questions about Comic-Con. Living up in Canada, I've never had a chance to go to any of the really big expos, i.e. San Diego, Wizard World, etc. I've gone to the ones here in Calgary, but I feel like the ones there are on another level. I've always wanted to go to one of the big ones, but I'm afraid San Diego might be too intimidating and difficult to get past this to. Any recommendations on this or other good cons, cities to visit? Any general advice for a first-time con goer?
And yeah, I thought this was good timing, you know, after San Diego just wrapped up last week, and yeah, exactly, and
there's been discussion too, I think, around the comics industry about the different cons and the levels that they're at and whatever.
Well, there always is. I mean, that's an ongoing conversation. But
somebody, it was Mahmoud Azwar, said something. It's just like every year you get the articles that like it's outgrown comics, and I'm sick of reading it. And I was like, you're totally right.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on.
But yeah, but that's so. That, I mean, that said, you know, I think we've all been to a lot of conventions, and we've been lucky enough to go to different cities and things like that. But if you're coming from Canada and you're looking like you want to go to San Diego, but it's too intimidating or difficult to get passes to, or whatever, and you've gone to Calgary, dude, just hop over the border and go to Emerald City Comic Con.
Yep.
Period. Yep. And full stop. Done. Like that will give you the better than the cons in Canada experience that you're looking for without the intimidation of San Diego.
Have you been to Toronto?
Fan Expo?
Yeah. Ron, did you ever go to that one?
No, I never did. Never did.
That's a big one.
I think, I think that's a good one or whatever. But I mean, if, like, the Seattle's the big one right now in terms of the one that, like, the most creators really love. You know, like, they love to go there. It's a very comic-centric show. It's big. It's crowded. I mean, you're going to get that big experience, but it's in a cool place. It's not, like, you know, San Diego is a different thing. And there's nothing wrong with that thing. But and I don't think it's intimidating. I think it's complex.
Yeah,
it's
not intimidating. I think the hardest thing about San Diego is getting passes and getting a hotel.
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
The show itself is what it is. It's I went there with people from work, and a bunch of them had it was their first time, and there was a whole array of reactions to it. Some people thought it was overwhelming. Some people loved it. But it is what it is. It's just the hardest part about San Diego is getting into it.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think that my first instinct was like, check out Seattle. I think that's going to give you that thing without that heavy edge. If you want to be a comic-focused show, I know a lot of people like Heroes, but it's not going to give not everybody's going to be there. That's in North Carolina. That's certainly going to give you the American experience in a different way than San Diego. How's C2E2 shaping up these days?
C2E2 actually is good. I mean, it's an interesting show in that it's in Chicago, but where the convention center is, it's not like it's kind of away from the city. Like it's you know, not as bad as Rosemont, thankfully. But but the thing is, it's a really nice convention center, a lot of space to breathe, a lot of breathing room. One of the best artist alleys in the country.
The whole Midwest seems to go to that show, and there's a lot of great artists in the sort of middle of America.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if you want to avoid San Diego as a thing, which I can understand because it's really a hell of an investment, and it's a crapshoot sort of if you're going to get tickets or not. Like these other things are sure bets, and you're going to have a great time. Like, they're great comic shows.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Emerald City is the best show in the country, period. Yeah. So, yeah. Cool. All right. There well, hopefully go. That helps you, Norman. So, on to our next email. Dave from Beverly, Mass. Says, outside of the movies, do you guys have a favorite Star Wars Expanded Universe story? Ooh. Story arc or run? Even a prose book, if you've read any? I think one or two stated in the past that you really have no interest in the franchise other than the movies, but I can't remember which. That's Connor, correct?
That's Connor. But he's still read a lot.
We read a lot.
That's going forward. I've read, feels like hundreds of the books.
Well, it's funny because this actually just came up this week because somehow the conversation fell to the Star Wars prose novels, and I revealed that I spent most of the 90s reading them.
Yeah, I read all. I want to say dozens and dozens and dozens of those books.
Well, the one that I stopped.
I can tell you which one I stopped up. It's the same one.
It's because the book was announced and they were starting the PR swing and they said, this is the book where Chewbacca dies.
Yep.
And I went, you know, I don't really want to live in a world where Chewbacca's not around. And I said, I'm good. And I didn't buy it. I've never looked back.
See, I didn't have a moment like that. I remember when that happened, but I think I read the book
in college and I threw it away.
It was like 99. It was late, right?
I can tell you when I stopped though. I remember exactly the moment. I think I was in the middle of the second or third Rogue Squadron book, and I just thought, what am I doing?
Oh, the Rogue Squadron books were
having
great.
Fun, having a great time.
I know that, but I saw a whole path in front of me, and I was like, I don't want to keep doing this forever. Because you could just exist on Star Wars novels.
You know what's funny is that, and now it's 2015, and where are you at?
No, I know. But I'd gone through this like period of a couple of years where I was basically just reading Star Wars book. I started out like I didn't even know they were a thing, and I read all the Thrawn books, and I read Heir to the Empire?
Heir to the Empire.
That's the middle one.
Yep.
By the way, that's my favorite. And then the second set of Thrawn books, and then the Tales of, and then I was reading Rogue Squadron, and I thought I'm muddying the waters too much.
Yeah.
And I think this was probably just after the Phantom Menace. And so that was a bellwether to me.
Yeah, that's probably, I mean, the time.
You read them late because those were coming out when we were in high school.
No, I know. I will never forget the day I walked in to the bookstore in my town, and it had to have been 9th or 10th grade, maybe even 8th grade. It was like early 90s, and I saw the first Zahn book. And yep. I just was like, what is this? And I had thought they'd been coming out. Like, I thought it was kind of like Han Solo at Star's End, whatever, you know, like that, you know, the old stuff. I thought they had been out and I just didn't know about it. But then I found out, like, no, it just came out. And I bought the hardcover and devoured it. It was
those books are huge page turners.
Oh, they're
I mean, the thing is, I read Scoundrels. That came out in 2013.
Oh, how was it?
It was fun. I mean, the reason why I liked it was because it was just a tale of Han, Chewie, and Lando back when they were, you know, pre-Star Wars, when they were running a heist, basically.
And Lobot, did he call him Lo?
No. Lobot wasn't in the book.
We're not answering Dave's question, though. So Connor and/or Josh, what was your favorite of those stories?
Well, nothing I think will ever beat the feeling of those first three Zahn books.
Okay. Where
it really did feel like there's this new trilogy of stories.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
If I had to pick a favorite out of all of them... I really do love those, and they were a really fun experience. I really liked Heir to the Empire because of the way that it sat in the middle so well, which is funny because it's totally the thing that bugs me about the Star Wars comics now, but I was younger. Yeah. And then the other thing is Tales of the Bounty Hunters.
Tales of the Bounty Hunter
is like my favorite thing on Earth.
I was going to say, for me, Tales of the Bounty Hunters and Tales from Jabba's Palace both stand out as just like...
Cantina is different than Jabba's Palace?
Well, I'm sorry?
So. There's also Cantina, right?
No, that's the Tales from Jabba's Palace.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was what's great about that was if you were like me and you played the Star Wars role-playing game.
Yep.
All those characters from the cantina became real, and then they had stories about them in the books, and that was a whole period of time in high school where that whole world was getting fleshed out through the game and through the books, which was great.
High school for me was like it was a dark time. I was like I'll play basketball, and then I got to college and I met you guys and people like you, and I was like, oh no, this is where I belong.
Well, I played sports and read these books, Josh.
Yeah, I know.
You can do both.
No, but I didn't. The point is, I didn't want to.
It's not your fault.
And also, I was, and this is key. I was not good. And here's the thing: a lot of people will tell you it doesn't matter if you win or lose or how you. That's bullshit. If you suck, it sucks. Period.
Yeah. Oh gosh. All right, this is not a therapy session. But yeah, so
I differ. I beg to differ, my friend.
What else has this show been, Rod, but a 10-year therapy session?
One long extracted therapy.
There's a lot less subtext now, though.
Yeah.
So I don't have time to be subbed. There you go.
What's funny, though, is that we're talking mainly about the pros, and that collectively I don't think any of us really read a lot of the expanded universe and the comic side of things, but the only one I did read was the Dark Empire one.
Yes.
Which was like the first one.
That was the book of the month.
Yeah.
Way back then.
It was great. Yeah. Well, no, that was when they came back. But
the book of the month.
The Cam Kennedy. Right. Yeah. It was the book of the month. I forgot.
I liked Knights of the Old Republic, the games.
Okay.
First and second ones. Those are great. The things that.
Well, you're talking like games. For me, there's the.
Those are story, though.
Yeah. But for me, there's only one game that with story that mattered to me, and that was the Dark Forces.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. Oh, God, I played that game so much. I wonder if I can get an emulator of that game. That was the first-person shooter with, what was his name? Kyle Katarin.
Did either That's of you... the one that I got as far as IG-88, and I quit.
Oh, I finished it. It was awesome.
Did either of you play the Atari Empire Strikes Back game?
Yeah, totally.
In which you just shot at the AT-ATs over and over again?
Yeah.
Game since then has that, some version of it. No, everyone.
Well, they all tried to do that. Yeah, everyone. I mean, and I love the Super Nintendo, the Super Star Wars, Super Empire Strikes Back, Super Return of the Jedi. I played those crazy. Yeah, yeah. Dark Forces was great.
Anyway. Thanks, Dave. I think you got what you wanted there.
Yeah, there you go.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. It can be a non-Star Wars related question, although we will take them, clearly, and run with them. So,
it's almost as if they think we've used up our G.I. Joe quotient.
We'll also talk about G.I. Joe. It's been a while. In fact, there was a fantastic shipwreck cosplayer at San Diego. Wow.
Was he doing a bad Jack Nicholson?
What was that? Jesus.
I haven't done it in a while. That's what shipwreck was. Just a bad joke.
Yes, no, it was. But what you just
did, what you were doing.
What you just did was something completely different.
No, but I did see Christian Slater, so it's kind of like doing a bad Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Check out a couple of upcoming shows. Ron and I and a fanboy staffer, Mike Romo, talking Ant-Man. You can find that show on the feed right behind this one or at ifanboy.com. So we talked the new Marvel Studios film Ant-Man starring Paul Rudd. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about the latest DC Universe animated original movie, Justice League Gods and Monsters, which is Bruce Timm's return to the line with an Elseworlds tale about evil versions of the Justice League.
Interesting.
So we can look forward to those two shows. Or you can find the first one right now, and the second one's coming up in a few weeks.
All right. And you can go over to ifanboy.com, where you can find that Ant-Man show, as well as this show. Show notes for all podcasts are posted there, and you can comment on them, talk about this week's books, interact with the community. It's a vibrant community of diehards who just won't leave, and we love them for it. And if you can't get enough, head over to facebook.com/ifanboy and be sure to follow ifanboy on Twitter @ifanboy. And if you want to descend further into the madness, you can follow us individually on Twitter. You can find Josh at JA Flanagan, Connor at CS Kilpatrick, and I am at Ron XO.
Hey, all right. If you like this show, you could write a review in iTunes, or you could help spread the word on your social media feeds, or you could tell people about it in person. What you want to do is you want to go to a comic shop and you want to hear two guys going, well, you know, I like him, man. And then you go, excuse me. If you want to hear what some dudes who know their shit think about it, go here. And that's exactly how you should say it. You should make them feel lesser and that we are better. You know what? Actually, maybe road test that. See how that goes. But seriously, you guys, you are our advertising, PR, and marketing firm. So get on that. We want to see results.
Yeah, we're going to have a status meeting next week.
we got a quota, all right?
You got to bring it to the board.
Yeah.
You could also give me those deck pages.
Oh, yeah, we're going to need...
Listen, we need a deck. That's what we're missing.
Okay, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
What sort of percentage of the audience you think was okay with had that deck joke? How narrow do you think I have cast?
Says you can't because you lie. Hey. You don't say nothing that builds up inside. Feels like you hit your funny bone again, except it's more like lightning in your vein.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.